Hello, everybody. Josh Brown here, back for another great episode on Franchise Euphoria. Well, today's episode is brought to you by IndieFranchiseLaw.com, a leading resource in the franchise space to help you if you're considering buying a franchise, turning your business into a franchise, or growing your business through a licensing or franchise structure. So go on, check it out, IndieFranchiseLaw.com. I think you'll find a lot of valuable and free information as you continue to kind of weigh franchising and licensing and the growth of your business. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's episode. On today's episode of Franchise Euphoria, I'm thrilled to welcome Brinson Smith. He's the Director of Franchise Sales for You Break, I Fix. If you've listened to the show for a long period of time, I had on another VP of Franchise Development for You Break, I Fix back in 2015, Todd Evans. And so now Brinson's coming on to really talk specifically about his role in developing franchise sales. He's a sales and franchise consultant with a strong background in helping entrepreneurs break into the world of franchising, as well as helping established franchise owners diversify their portfolio. His most recent venture is working as the director of franchise sales for You Break, I Fix. And it's a really interesting interview, first and foremost, to see that they continue to grow dramatically. I mean, I think now You Break, I Fix has, he indicates, over 580 stores open and another 500 in development. They were recently acquired by Asurion, essentially a large insurance type company, back in August of 2019. And they continue to grow and evolve and develop the brand. And we have a really interesting conversation about how you do that, how you find the right franchisees, how you grow a brand, and how things have changed for them in the midst of COVID. So hope you enjoy this interview as much as I did with Brinson Smith. Brinson, welcome to Franchise Euphoria. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. So You Break, I Fix back in the house at Franchise Euphoria. I was looking back and it looks like I interviewed the VP of franchising back in 2015 and we talked about all sorts of good stuff. So if anybody wants to hear that initial interview, you can go back in the archives and just search for You Break, I Fix and you'll pull it up. But it was a great interview in sort of the model, the You Break, I Fix model and everything. Obviously, a lot's happened between 2015 and today.
For sure.
Not the least of which is COVID-19.
Right.
Retail shopping. But you're the director of franchise sales. So I thought it'd be really beneficial and fantastic to kind of focus this interview on what it's like to be the director of franchise sales for a franchise system that, well, you guys have over 570 locations at this point?
Yeah, we're at 580, as of today, 581 stores open.
They're open. How many are in development?
So we've got almost 500 in addition to the 581 that have been sold. So we're just at basically right over 1,000 stores when you factor open and stores awarded as well.
But so that in and of itself just blows my mind. Because I have an idea of how that works, but for a lot of people, they just hear like, you got 580 some open. You got 500 and some in the pipeline. How do you get 500 and some in the pipeline? And how do you open all those at this? Like, how does that even work?
Well, I'll say You Break, I Fix has made it very easy for me and my team to do this over the last 6 years. You know, we've got a great opportunity and I think that helps. And, you know, I'll say, I think the biggest thing for, you know, me and my team is belief. We believe 100% in what we're doing and the opportunity that we're discussing with, you know, candidates day in and day out, you know, so much so that for me, you know, I've got family in the business. You know, my mom is a franchisee, my brother's a franchisee, my cousin. I've got a lot of family involved.
You got some pressure there, Brinson.
Yeah. And believe it or not, they still talk to me, which is great. you know, still have Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas dinner and all that good stuff. But yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's belief. You know, we've got a great opportunity that makes sense. And we're just really passionate about sharing it. And I think over the years, we've just put our head down. We've worked really, really hard. We've relayed expectations very clearly for, you know, the corporate staff, the people on my team. And yeah, worked really hard to get there. And, you know, you look up and we're at 581 stores and we've awarded a ton of stores. But yeah, it's been a lot of hard work. And I would say the biggest thing is just, you know, a lot of great people. We got a great team.
Is it still the same kind of look and feel? I call it the, and this is a compliment, so it's not meant to be otherwise, but I call it like the half-baked kind of look and feel where like you, every day, anytime I've ever walked into You Break, I Fix, I feel like, is this store complete or is it just like this simple?
Yeah, like, no, it's a good question. Yeah, it is really simple. We basically separate our store into two different sections. You've got the front of house and back of house. And what separates the two is this really simple partition wall. It's essentially drywall with some electrical, and you have some tables in the back, and you know, you have a point of purchase desk and accessory walls in the front. So build out is very, very minimal. We don't need a ton of square footage.
What is your ideal square footage at this point? Like what, 1,000 square feet or something, 1,200?
Yeah, so I think our FDD states that it's, you know, between 700 to 1,400 square feet. And we, you know, we have stores that are in Manhattan that, you know, are 400 to 500 square feet. And then we have a store, believe it or not, in the Southeast that was an old Joseph A. Banks clothing store that got turned into a You Break, I Fix store. And I think that one's about 3,000 square feet. So that's the largest.
What do they do with all the space? Is it just like, you know, empty chairs or like what's in there?
Well, we actually had a shop that converted to a You Break, I Fix. It was a prior business that became a franchise, and they did a ton of computer repair. They had a really big staff. So that conversion, you know, they needed that space. It was a very high volume store, but that's on the high side. I mean, I would say 90% of our stores fall within that like 700 to 1,400 square feet kind of sweet spot. And some of our franchisees as well have, you know, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 stores. Our largest franchisee today has 37. So some of those owners will have kind of an incubator store, I call it, or a training store. It might be a little bit larger on purpose so that they can train their second, third, fourth, fifth store, and they've just got extra room for employees. But yeah, that's the sweet spot, 700 to 1,400.
What percentage of the model, obviously you're in retail locations. I mean, what percentage of the model though is reliant on walk-ins versus, I mean, are the owners forging relationships with school systems and other folks where they can be a source to fix, you know, their iPads or iPhones? I mean, what's the main source of business for if You Break, I Fix?
That's a good question. And I'm going to answer it probably a little differently. So back when Todd was interviewed back in 2015, his answer then would be different than my answer here today. And the reason I say that, predominantly back in 2015, our customers were people that broke their device, whatever it was, and we are an electronic repair brand. So if it's got a power button, we can fix it. Now, the majority of those devices due to, you know, circulation is obviously cell phones. You know, there's more cell phones than arguably any other device ever made. So we get a ton of those come in our doors. But, you know, you go back to 2015, the majority of the business, like literally, you know, 9 out of 10 customers, almost 10 out of 10, were people that broke their device. They didn't have a warranty. They did not have device insurance. They went online on an unbroken device where they could get their broken device fixed. And they saw us online and they walked into a You Break, I Fix store. Today, you know, we have over 7 million customers to date, and we are partnered with some really large brands. And we focused over that, you know, 2015 to, I would say, 2017-18, we had a huge focus on OEM partnerships, wanting to be basically married to the companies that are manufacturing, selling, insuring, distributing these devices, so that when that customer of, you know, those brands break their device, they reach out to, give you an example, Samsung. You're a Samsung customer, you reach out to Samsung, you know, you have a Galaxy device. Samsung's going to actually refer you to the closest You Break, I Fix, which is really, really cool. Same thing with Google, same thing with Hewlett Packard, same thing with Asurion, which is a huge, you know, electronic device warranty company in 31 countries.
Is it still them coming in and paying you, or is this through, is insurance now involved with all of this, or how's all that work in terms of payment?
Yeah, great question. So we still get the customers that, you know, they have the older devices, iPhone 5, iPhone 6, or, you know, whatever that device is that, you know, breaks, they don't have insurance, they come in, they pay out of pocket. But that big shift over the last few years has been these partnerships to where, to give you an example, if somebody's an Asurion customer, and Asurion's a huge company, they work with retailers all across the board, AT&T, Verizon, many others. But if you, let's say you were an AT&T or Verizon customer and you walked in and you paid for that device protection, well, if you break your device, you're going to reach out to Asurion because you paid for that protection, and they're going to refer you to go into the closest You Break I Fix. Now, there's typically a deductible that the customer will pay, but they'll come into the You Break I Fix, we'll do the repair, and the customer will be on their way. So we have that relationship, and our backend systems, which is kind of cool, integrates into all of our partners. So it's really nice. It's a streamlined process for the customer, and it's a smooth process for the franchisee too.
So, I mean, obviously with this many stores open and this many in the process of opening, I guess to a certain degree, it makes your job a little bit easier. I know there's a lot of competition out there. Maybe it doesn't make your job easier. I don't know. But, there's a whole lot of competition regardless, right? I mean, there's a whole lot of competition in franchising. And one of the biggest struggles for franchisors is figuring out the best mechanism for growing their franchisee folks, the folks who want to come in and buy in as a franchisee. And, you're seeing a big push of late with the broker model, right?
Right.
I mean, you're seeing a big push where, the upfront franchise fees that franchisees are paying, usually a good portion of it, at the very least, is going towards brokers.
Right. And
there's those fees that are associated with that. I mean, have you been a part of that whole big broker network, or what have you guys implemented to help propel this growth?
Yeah. So we like brokers, and we've had some good relationships with some brokers over the years, but we have not leveraged the broker network.
I love that. I really do. Because so many people we've got to dive into that a little bit, because I think that they're overused sometimes. So I'd love to hear how you guys made that decision to not leverage them, and then how you've been successful not leveraging them.
Yeah. So I think one of the big reasons why we've chosen to, and again, this isn't a knock on brokers are great. And I've got some relationships with some great brokers, and they're really worth their weight in gold, depending on the case. We just haven't needed to use them. And I think that if we were in a scenario where we needed to rely on the broker network to either, start the franchise, springboard the franchise system, we would. But yeah, we just haven't had to. And I think one of the things that we've done over the years that I think has worked well for us is, we've gotten the appropriate literature out in the franchise locations and corporate locations throughout, the US and Canada. And believe it or not, the majority, our largest inquiry, when you look at it by percentage, comes from people that had a great experience in our store. And we are just obsessed with customer service. And I know everybody talks about customer service these days, but 33% of our, roughly 7 million customers are repeat customers. So if you blow those people out of the water and you give them a great experience, you also let them know that you are a franchise, there's an opportunity for them. That comes back to you. So we've gotten tons of leads. We get thousands of leads that come through every single year. And there are other things that we do. We do franchise shows.
Not anymore.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, no, I've been at my home for quite a while. And I've missed going out to some of those franchise shows. We've tried some of the virtual shows as well.
Have those been any good?
Yeah. And again, not to knock these guys. We've got great relationships with some of these companies that are out there. Haven't had really any great results with any of those virtual shows so far.
I know, because some things just have to be in person, right? Don't you think?
I agree.
Like I like the idea, but I've been invited to so many of the virtual franchise stuff, and I'm with you. I don't want to knock it. I love the creativity. I love the ingenuity of it, but I'm like, I'm not all that interested, because I mean, I like going to a place, mingling with people, seeing people in person. I don't know, for the next year and a half, I don't know what some of these conferences and so forth are going to do, but it's clearly not a substitute. But you found, though, just from actually participating, that you haven't received the same kind of return that you normally would.
Not even close. Yeah, really no return. And again, I'm not knocking the some of the shows out there, and people that we've worked with are incredible. But we just, when you have two or three people attend a webinar, that's great. And, we're glad to do that webinar, but you just don't get the same amount of traffic, and the engagement, to your point, is different. you know, you're not.
Yeah. And the only thing you can bank on at that point is just if they, you know, because the thing about webinars and all that, it's not necessarily how many people attend on that show. It's how well they market it afterwards, right?
Sure.
Because it's got that evergreen effect. Right. But the reality is, because nobody has in-person stuff, we're all smothered with, hey, go to this meeting, you know, go to this online thing.
Right.
And I think for a lot of people, it's like overwhelming. It's like,
I agree.
No, I don't want to do it.
It's easy to get lost in these Zoom meetings that we all have now, you know, every other hour.
So what are you doing to replace that, Brinson? Like, what are you doing to replace that in-person selling opportunity that you would have at a conference?
Yeah. So I think what we're doing is we're just focusing on, you know, the leads that are coming in. We have leads, inquiries that go to our website every single day. And we've got a really good, you know, flow of those organic leads that are coming in. So, you know, my team, we focus on those. You know, we don't want prospects waiting too long. We pick up the phone, we call them, we try to set a call. And then the next thing that we're doing that kind of ties into what we just, you know, talked about is we used to do a in-person discovery day twice a month, and we've been doing them since 2014, you know, where people actually fly to Orlando, they pay to fly, they come down, they see the opportunity. And we've seen anywhere from, I would say about pre-COVID this year, I mean, we had a good start. We were probably around 15 to 16 attendees per discovery day. Last year, probably had anywhere from, you know, 14 to 16 attendees per discovery day in person in Orlando. And we've had to pivot. So we now do a Zoom virtual discovery day where people can attend. We do two a month. And we've had great attendance. It's easier for people to get to, obviously. But yeah, we've had to shift to those discovery days. And so far, they've worked well.
So what else are you doing? I mean, clearly you have an idea. I think one thing that's clear is you guys know who you're going after. So I think for a lot of franchise brands, I mean, one of the things I'll talk about with them is, you know, you have to know who you're targeting first. And it sounds so easy to say, but I'm always amazed at the number of brands that really don't know, because they go, oh, we'll just target anybody who, you know, has this trait or has that trait. I'm like, well, no, who are you really going after? Like the clearer you are in who you're going after, who can be the franchisee, the better it is. So I'm curious with you guys. I mean, at this point, you have so many people who are a part of it that I'm sure you reach out to your current network of franchisees to see if they're interested, at least the good operators, you know, hey, do they want to come in and take on some more units, which is always, which is probably natural and certainly, but outside of that, who are you looking for? What has been shown in your, with You Break, I Fix to sort of be, you know, these are some of the traits that seem to be and lead to good operators, good franchisees.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for us, multi-unit franchisees, I would say is a category, you know, that we've really focused on over the years. You know, Franchise Update Media has put on that multi-unit franchise conference out in Vegas. I mean, we've been attending that now for, you know, 6 years. And, you know, focusing and creating those relationships with people that have other brands, I think is a huge positive. Because franchisees, whether it's food, whether it's a dry cleaning business, whether it's a 7-Eleven, whatever they own, you know, this does translate because it is a system, you know, we do have, you know, support and they can plug into, you know, our business. So that was that, that's one demographic that we focused on. The other has really been, you know, players in the cellular world, because there's a connection to electronic devices and a lot of these cellular, you know, players that own AT&T stores, Verizon stores, T-Mobile, Sprint, Cricket Wireless. It's been a really natural, it's been natural to reach out to those parties. And, you know, we've spent over the years, we've spent money, you know, marketing dollars on, you know, ways to attract those parties, whether it's getting in front of marketing in an industry magazine, you know, that those cellular players, you know, read, or going to events that they'll be at and sponsoring events and getting in front of them. So a lot of things like that. But for us, it's really multi-unit owners, players in the cellular space have been really the two, you know, biggest focuses for us. And then I would say also corporate refugees, you know, people, you know, that are just looking to leave corporate America and start their own business. They're new to business. But yeah, industry publications, going to those events, spending the marketing dollars to do those sort of things has paid off over the years for us.
So what's sort of the, I mean, you're obviously in the cell phone world. I mean, what's sort of the future you see for this business? I mean, with COVID as an example, are you guys looking at even ways to make your service less retail focused? Or, I mean, are there other things you guys are contemplating right now?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So when COVID hit, you know, we looked at our business and we realized we're obviously a brick and mortar retail store. And, you know, a lot of people are still okay coming into a brick and mortar store, but a lot of people are less inclined to do that. So we came up with a few different options where, you know, customers can drop off their device curbside. They can mail their device into a store as opposed to coming in, getting in their car. And then we also have a We Come to You option outside of dropping it off in the brick and mortar store, where a van can come to the customer as well. So that's something that we've focused on over the last 12 months. It was actually 2019. We rolled out a mobile opportunity that's connected to the You Break, I Fix opportunity. And that's been awesome, you know, to see. And yeah, kind of an interesting side note, you know, when you look at where we are through the end of July, we're actually 20% up year over year versus where we were last year in gross sales. So our company, I think too, being an essential service was really positive for us. Sure. Most of our doors stayed open. You know, there were some employee issues surrounding employees getting sick or not coming in and owners having to close stores. And I think every franchisee has, you know, probably had some issues with employees over the last 4 to 6 months. But overall, we were very fortunate that we weren't impacted like some of the other retail brands were.
So as we finish up here, I'm just kind of curious. So in your role as director of franchise sales, once the sale is made, you know, once you bring that franchisee on, do you then pass it on to the operational team, or are you still involved until the store is up and going and maybe even beyond that?
Yeah. So part of our franchise development, we kind of split our franchise development team really into two sections. We've got the franchise sales kind of team. That's the tip of the spear, if you will. The onboarding team goes through the process of, you know, connecting with that lead to getting franchise agreement signed, fees paid, that sort of thing. Once the owner has come forward and they've signed agreements and they're welcome to the family, we pass them over to our development team, which is really kind of the back end of the development team. And what they are is they're really the onboarding, real estate, everything from identifying their space to getting their training done to basically holding their hand through the opening process, that team member does. So we do kind of a soft handoff to that development team. And a gal named Ryan Frost heads up the real estate development for us. She's awesome. And they do a great job of getting doors open very quickly.
Well, Brinson, it's been fun talking to you, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
Talked to Todd back in 2015. We got you in 2020. We got the growth just continues. I'll have to look back on that episode. I can't remember what the number of stores opened. I know we discussed it at that time, but I thought maybe it was in the 200s at that point.
Yeah, it was probably somewhere between 150 and 225. It was probably somewhere in that sweet spot. So yeah, a lot of growth over the years.
Yeah. So, well, I really appreciate you coming on. I mean, if anybody wants to learn more about it, they can go to youbreakifix.com, find you on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. I'm sure you just Google You Break I Fix and there'll be a whole bunch of stuff pop up there. And I wish you continued success, man. Things are going well, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Franchise Euphoria. If you enjoyed this episode or have enjoyed the podcast in general, I would really appreciate it if you could go to iTunes and leave me a rating and review. It really helps to get this podcast out to more and more people. So the easy way to do it is go to iTunes and in the search box, put in Franchise Euphoria. You will then see my cover art and you click on my smiling face that says Franchise Euphoria and then click on the link that says ratings and reviews. It's that simple, but boy, oh boy, does it mean the world to me when people leave ratings and reviews. And like I said, it really helps get the show out there. Once again, would love it if you would go to iTunes and leave a rating and review if you enjoyed this episode or other episodes of the show. And until the next time, happy franchising.